Hello and welcome back to Agents Represent. I'm Daniel and I'm one of your hosts. Now, today's episode is going to be an archived episode, a convention episode. We had previously done convention episodes before, but not with multiple guests. And this was the first time that we had done one. This took place at Fan Expo Canada and features our good friends Banana and Sen. We talked about their upcoming game, tentatively titled Jiangxi in the Banquet Hall. We talked about the Chinese-American experience, restaurants, and growing up in them, and how the supernatural can tie families together. It was a great episode, but full disclosure, the audio on my end, so the mic that I was inputting into, was a little messed up. Sen and Banana, their audio was fantastic. And so, when you're listening to me, it's not the greatest audio. But, we will make do and do better next time. That being said, I have a couple of announcements. From October 10th to the 13th, I will be in Walnut Creek, California for Big Bad Con. So if you're going to Big Bad Con, hit us up on Twitter, hit me up on Twitter, and let us know that you're going to be there. I want to meet up with you. I want to talk to fans of the show. If you're a creator, I want to try to get in some interviews, maybe do like 10-minute interviews. We'll figure something out. Second thing, and this is a big piece of news for me, a big sort of personal and I guess professional announcement. For the past 2 years, I've been working on my game Ross Rifles, and we actually released the first episode of our actual play deep dive into it last month, and it's finally going to be on Kickstarter. So from October 4th to November 4th, Ross Rifles will be on Kickstarter, and I would really appreciate your support. It could be through backing it. It could be through spreading the word on Ross Rifles. I've been working on this for a long time, and it's kind of been my way of ensuring that there is a Chinese-Canadian voice in the history of the First World War, the greatest war, some might say. And I'm very excited for it to be on Kickstarter. I'm very excited for us to, bring these tales of omitted history onto the tabletop and hopefully, into the minds of people who aren't just in Canada, but all over the world. So Ross Rifles is going to be on Kickstarter from October 4th to November 4th, and I would really appreciate your support through backing it or even just sharing it with somebody who you think would enjoy the project. But that being said, I'm going to get straight into this interview featuring our good friends Sen and Banana, and we're going to be talking about Jiangxi in the Banquet Hall. And once again, I'm so sorry for the quality of the audio. We will fix this. Enjoy. Okay. This is actually our first ever convention episode.
Ooh.
Never recorded an episode of Agents Represent.
Oh, wow.
I feel honored.
Like, it, especially in this sort of setting. I've recorded at like a hotel before, but this is the first time where we're actually sitting in a hallway. There's people everywhere. There's like, I think that's Peter Parker. That's definitely a Jedi of some sort. And I want to say a very, very hip-looking reporter. Oh, it's Clark Kent. Okay, I really smart. Fucked that one up.
That's okay.
I fucked that one up. Peter, I'm a Marvel guy, that's why. This is the first time I've ever recorded a podcast while sitting in a hallway in a busy thoroughfare. But it's the only time that I can get you two together.
Probably true.
Yeah, that's
true.
definitely in person.
Yeah. So do you want to introduce yourselves? Veteran, returning guest to Agents Represent.
Thanks for having me again. My name is Banana Chan. I am a role-playing game designer and a writer for board games. I also have my own company called Game in a Curry, which publishes board games. And I am very glad that I pressured you into doing this with
us. You didn't pressure me to do this.
I feel
this.
Like I pressured you.
I feel like pressure. I really wanted to have Sen on as well. Not just to have you on, but I also wanted to talk to Sen.
Cool. My name is Sen Fung Lim. I use he, him pronouns, and I'm a board game designer from London, Ontario, Canada. I'm a psych prof by day and a game designer by night, and I've been an role-playing for years and years and years, like more decades than you can probably count. And Banana and I have been starting to work on designing role-playing games together. So we're kind of merging all of our mutual loves for gaming and creating interesting and new products.
Nice. I think you really are both are underselling who you are in this industry. First of all, like pioneers. When I first heard Asians Represent, I was like, okay, we made a list of all the people who we needed to have on the show, who would bring value to the show and would have really, really good insight. And both of you were on that original list. We had you on. We talked about Cyberpunk.
Yeah.
We talked about Block Wars, Judge Dredd, Gaiman & Curry. But now it's time to talk about Chinese restaurants.
Yeah.
Which is a giant like 180 from Cyberpunk and cops who just dispense the law at their own discretion.
That's not far off, to be honest, because in the game that we're writing, Sen and I were writing Jiangxi in the Banquet Hall. I feel like there are cops that that do terrible things in that as well.
Yeah, or have the possibility of doing really kind of oppressive and racist things towards the protagonists of the story game.
So we're on theme then. Instead of doing a 180, we're on theme.
Yeah, we're kind of on theme.
And it's more Asian.
Yes.
More Asian.
Yeah.
So
yes.
Do you want to break down what the game is for the audience?
Sure.
Who might not have ever heard you talk about it or introduce it at a con.
Yeah, of course. So the game that Sen and I are working on is called Jiangxi in the Banquet Hall. It's a tabletop role-playing game where the players take on the roles of family members running a Chinese restaurant in the 1920s in somewhere in the U.S. or Canada. So it deals a lot with racism and, you know, oppression of the time. But also at nighttime, Jiangxi, hopping vampires, come out and try to wreak havoc.
Mm-hmm. And kill you.
Yes.
Specifically in the restaurant?
Yes.
Yep.
Pretty
Sometimes,
much.
Sometimes, yep. Yeah. Most of the time.
Yeah. So that's awesome. So wait, this is a role-playing game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So who are the protagonists embodying?
So you are each a character, each a family member. So there's a family, usually of four. So you could be a parent, a child, or a grandparent. So it goes through like several generations.
Yeah, it's that classic multi-generational Chinese family running a restaurant to survive in a white man's world.
That's your Kickstarter pitch right there.
Yeah, something like that.
That's awesome, because when you first told me that you were doing a Chinese game about Jiangxi and restaurants, it immediately like spoke to me. It's like a little bit about me. My grandfather was one of those like early Chinese Canadians who set up restaurants in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
They owned restaurants like all over the city. And my mom grew up in Chinese restaurants, and you know, the kinds of restaurants that would try to cater to white people, you know, in order to keep business.
Mm-hmm.
And so my mom has this thing where she always has to eat an egg roll wherever she goes to like Mandarin or one of those buffets, because it reminds her of her childhood.
Right.
Oh.
When they did like, you know, spaghetti and hot dogs, and they offered like stuff that was like not really Asian. So my mom has like mad nostalgia for that. Of course, and like Jiangxi movies are super awesome, especially in those like 80s Hong Kong cinema.
Yes.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So like when you said that, I'm like, I'm super down. But what I didn't know was that the core sort of group of characters are going to be a family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think is super awesome. And I hope like the grandma is really badass.
Oh, badass grandma is totally a meme.
Yeah.
Totally a thing in the game. It always happens. Like, we don't necessarily write the grandma as a badass. They always end up being the badass.
I tend to push it that way.
I know.
They're keepers of knowledge, but also dispensers of family justice.
Yeah.
They're the holders of the wooden spoon, right? So
yeah. That brings back so many like memories. I'm like clutching my butt on the wooden spoon. Like that Asian upbringing.
Yeah.
So, oh no.
Jiangxi in the Banquet also, like, I get the Jiangxi thing. They're like an iconic Chinese monster.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is it just going to be that kind of monster? Are they going to literally be vampire hunters?
So the Jiangxi sort of manifests the horrors of living during that time and, you know, all the stuff that the family has to go through trying to stay together
right.
while, you know, maintaining who they are, you know, and going through like all this oppression that they have to, you know, they have to just live through. So that's kind of what the Jiangxi represent in this game.
So, yeah. So what of the Jiangxi specifically? For people who aren't familiar with this monster, it's like, it's a pretty iconic monster in Chinese culture. Mm-hmm. For those who don't know about it, who've never heard of the hopping vampire.
Oh, yeah. You have a better explanation of the hopping vampire.
Oh, so the hopping vampire, a little bit of background on what they are. Many, many years ago, these monks, these Taoist monks, I believe, decided that it would be a good idea to enchant these bodies that they were delivering from one space to another because they have to get them to a burial site. So they decide, hey, why don't we just make them hop over to the burial site so that way we don't have to carry them or we don't have to, you know, put them on a cart or something. So that happens. They put some pieces of paper on their foreheads, and that's how they started moving them towards their burial
talismans,
sites.
Not just paper.
Oh, talisman. Yeah, these talismans. In the game, we call them spirit paper.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and suddenly, you know, one of them runs amok, and that becomes a thing that people have to fix or solve.
Yeah. Nice. So the idea behind the Jiangxi is really that they're really like an analogy in our game to like horror and oppression and racism and all those things. It's like, oh, just one more thing.
Right.
And
right.
So for people who are listening who don't know about Jiangxi, they're not really like blood sucking. They're more like psychically sucking your soul out, your energy out, your chi.
Yeah, like almost like emotion draining.
Yeah. And so the idea of vampires that, you know, weigh you down and slowly, you know, drain the life and resistance out of you mm-hmm. is sort of our not so subtle comment on, you know, oppression in a society that maybe didn't really want you there.
Right.
Yeah. And yet the family is struggling to survive, struggling to make themselves a part of the North American landscape. So they're not really vampire hunters. They're more like vampire survivors.
Yeah.
Okay. So is there a particular reason why you've picked the 1920s?
Oh, yeah.
I'm so curious about that, because that's
100%.
Like post-World War I, right? Mm-hmm. Chinese people still aren't really considered citizens.
Yeah. Yep.
But it's also like decades removed now from the Chinese Exclusion Act, which still hasn't been abolished.
Mm-hmm.
Who had it? No,
it hadn't. It hadn't. Not yet. No.
So why the 1920s?
So specifically for San Francisco, this was written around San Francisco. But of course, there are different Chinatowns that you can play in. But when we started writing, we wanted to have a setting that was after all these different things that had happened in San Francisco. For example, the fire, the earthquake, the plague, like all these things. This restaurant, when
the
we were
Tong
writing.
Wars.
Yeah, exactly. The Tong Wars. Like this restaurant has survived like the test of time. And now we're in like the 1920s where it still survives. And, you know, now we have all these different generations that have lived through like all this crap that's happened.
Right. So they're hardened people.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's some resiliency built in to the older generation. And it's at a time where the younger generation might be a little more enchanted by the Western society.
Right.
And all the trappings of those things, right?
Oh, so they're more almost like you see like the westernized youth and the very traditional older generation.
Yep.
And that's why we wanted to make it multi-generational, because we wanted to think about forces. The whole idea really is what forces are ripping the family apart and what forces are holding the family together. Mm-hmm. And we talked about the talisman papers already, the spirit papers, that that's how you dispel the Jiangxi. But in the game, what you have to do is as a team, as the family, come up with one thought or one phrase that has held your family together for that session.
You know, very cool.
And then you stick it on the Jiangxi's head, and the Jiangxi are dispelled for that night. Mm-hmm. But every day, you have to come up with a new thing that held your family together.
So it's about togetherness. It's about, you know, maintaining that togetherness.
Yeah. It's about, you know, maintaining your identity as a Chinese person within America or Canada,
mm-hmm.
where you're not the majority, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's super cool.
Yeah. And each character also has a hope and dream. Mm-hmm. So they have hopes and dreams of their own. So say, for example, someone from an older generation, maybe they want their child to take over the business, but the child, their hopes and dreams are to become a jazz musician. So there's that sort of conflict there as well.
Oh, very cool. Like all of us kind of felt growing up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I'm sure other people feel that in terms of, you know, not Chinese people. But there's very much, I think, and stereotypical, but it's also, you know, our lived experiences that our parents have these very distinct hopes and dreams for us because they sacrifice so much to move to North America.
Yeah.
And if you understand the history of the Chinese Exclusion Acts and the head tax and all that kind of stuff.
The Fury Acts.
Yeah, exactly. We're talking about things that were made by law to keep us out of this country, our ancestors out of this country, and yet they still came and they still sacrificed, and all of that kind of stuff is very, very important to think about and to play in a game and live through it through the game, I think is interesting.
That was very cool. Now, I know a lot of people are probably listening and thinking, like, so from a systematic perspective, what's the game going to look like? Is it a diceless RPG? Is it going to be cards? Like, what are you folks using?
So we're using a set of D8s. And
yes. Oh, a set of D8, like custom D8s?
No,
just D8s.
Lots and lots of D8s.
It's just a lot of D8s.
Okay, so dice pooling 8 because for the significance?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was like, can't have D4s in this game. Oh. Unless you want to have negative things.
Well, if you roll a 4.
Yeah.
Sen, do you want to explain?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's dice pooling. And if you, for every 4 you roll, you must eliminate your highest roll. So,
oh,
like, if you roll a bunch of 4s, and, like, say you roll 2 4s, 3 5s, and a 6, you'd take out one of the 5s and one of the 6s from your pool and be left with 2 5s.
Damn. Yeah. So, you really have, like, allowed aspects of Chinese culture to permeate into the mechanics of the game as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, why not?
That's super awesome. I mean, I'm really into that, actually. So this is like a brand new system. You've devised this.
Yeah.
Yep.
Do you have a name for it?
Nope.
I'm so curious.
Nope. We don't have a system name.
The banquet hall system.
Yeah. I mean, the funniest thing is we originally were not going to use dice at all. It was going to be these Taoist divination tools.
Cool.
Yeah.
Because we had thought, like, what other cool thing could we use other than a Jenga tower or something like that? And so we thought, you know, what is the Chinese, like, randomizer? And so we thought originally about, you know, the sticks that you shake, and then we find jiaobei, which are the, like, the half moon things that you can throw, and depending on how they land, you can get different results. The problem is that they almost never land in one position, and we needed more variants, so we went with the dice.
Yeah.
But we then re-injected, you know, some culture into it with the eights and the fours.
That's super smart. And four, do you want to explain why the eights and fours are significant?
So
for those, because I know that a lot of the listeners of Asians Represent aren't actually Asian,
which is super cool,
which is really awesome.
That's thank you very much.
It's a learning opportunity.
Yeah,
yeah. So eight in Chinese, a lot of words sound like other words. So eights sound a lot like luck or fortune, whereas fours sound a lot like death. So that's why fours are bad and eights are good.
When my parents were, like, buying their first house, like the house that I grew, well, I guess their second house, the house that I grew up in, my dad would take my brother and I around the neighborhood. They're like, we almost bought that house, but your mom said no because it had a 4 in it.
So we lived in 44 Boundary Road when I grew up, and it was like, I don't know why my parents picked that.
What?
But I was really upset.
But 4 alone.
Oh, I know. And so, and I just got a phone for my youngest, and the phone number is, what is it? Well, don't call it, but it's...
you don't have to say the whole thing.
Yeah, not the area code, but the numbers are 3885888.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So he's like uber Chinese.
Uber Chinese.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, we were super lucky. And my oldest son, who was with me when he got that, he's like, oh, he's got a better number than I do, because he only has like 3 8s in his number. So.
Wow, I have no 8s. I've got 2 4s in my I know. Actually, yeah, I've got nothing good.
Yeah, I've got nothing good either.
Nothing good. Nothing even. You can't even add anything up to make 8. Actually, you can. Two numbers you can. I almost forgot my phone number. What I think I'll do is I'll edit this so I won't put every single number of your kid's phone number into this podcast.
It's okay. He won't pick it up. So the other kind of mechanics that we have during the day is, I don't know, did you ever get to work at any of your grandfather's restaurants?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. Okay, so you know the regimen that you go through to prepare every morning and at night what you have to do. So we built that into the game as well, where there's a task list that you have to divide up between the family. You know, who's going to hang the barbecue? Who's going to start the broth? Mm-hmm. Who's going to clean all the things? Who's going to do all these things? And the problem is that every morning you wake up and you roll a D8 to find out how much resilience you have for that day. And you spend resilience to do these tasks. And what happens eventually is that you run out of resilience.
Yeah, it's literally your spoons.
Yeah,
exactly.
And so you run out of the ability to take all these tasks in hand. And what happens to your restaurant when that when that fails? And how does that present to, you know, your customers who may or may not be, you know, part of the oppressive society?
Right. Yeah. So are they using, like, rice to ward off the Jiangxi and
that? Yeah. Vinegar, rice, roosters.
Yeah.
So
sunlight.
Spirit papers. And do this, because this is my experience. Does the family live above the restaurant?
Yeah. Usually.
Oh, awesome. This brings back memories. The last restaurant that my grandfather owned was in Niagara Falls.
Oh, wow.
And we used to drive down at least once a year to go to the restaurant.
Yeah.
And my brother and I would just, like, it was this big buffet that catered to tourists.
Yeah.
Who were always Chinese. It was, like, the only Chinese restaurant in this one area. And my brother and I would just be running around the restaurant trying to help out or trying to not have to work.
Right.
Nice.
Just trying to eat the ice cream. Then I became lactose intolerant, so I think that's karma.
kind of is.
But, yeah, this is bringing back, like, a lot of memories of, like, when you were describing, like, oh, yeah, you know, working in the restaurant and then living above the restaurant, I just immediately started picturing that restaurant, the Autumn Moon restaurant in Niagara Falls, which is sadly no longer there.
Aww.
But that's okay. My grandfather retired, and now he's happy.
Yeah.
He lived up his hopes and dreams.
Yeah, hopes and dreams.
Yeah. He did. So the vampire, the Jiangxi, comes about and is just fucking shit up during the day. How does it factor into the narrative?
So each day actually has four quarters. So you have early morning, you have afternoon, nighttime, and then late at night, the dead of night. So the Jiangxi don't actually come out until nighttime. In the daytime, you have to deal with, you know, the restaurant, keeping it up, and dealing with customers. When nighttime happens, Jiangxi come out, you still have your customers, you still have to make sure that they don't get attacked by the Jiangxi, and once the customers leave, then you still have to ward them off. That way you can get some, you know, get some rest for the next day. So each day, in a campaign, or not a campaign, but like a longer game, sometimes it could be a campaign, there are about 5 days.
Right.
And with each day, you get a set of dice. So on the first day, you would get like 5 dice. The second day, you would get 1 dice taken away. So that's 4 dice. So each day gets a little harder and harder with your roll.
So that's your family pool. But you also have individual dice. And individual dice are gained by getting closer to your hopes and dreams. So let's say that you're playing, Daniel's playing the grandfather, and the grandfather has a dream that, what would your dream be for a character? What was your grandfather's dream?
My grandfather on my mom's side, he wanted me to become a doctor.
Okay, so let's say he wanted you to become a doctor.
Yeah.
And you, as the character, Daniel,
I did not become a doctor.
We know. But Daniel, almost.
Almost.
Right? Daniel's character, you know, sent in his college application. Then Daniel's grandfather's character would get a die in his individual pool. Mm-hmm. And the individual pool can be rolled. When it's rolled, it's lost. Your family pool kind of keeps on. It's always there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you can also use your individual dice to help other people as well. So lots of ways to gain and lose dice.
Can your individual hopes and dreams clash with the family pool?
Not with the family. They don't clash with the family pool, but they clash with each other.
They clash. Yeah. So you could actually do something that results in somebody losing dice?
No.
Yeah, no, you spend your own dice.
Spend your own dice.
Yeah. But also, with, you know, if you roll like your family pool and you fail a roll, you also get a die.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I see. That's super cool. Now I want to play this.
Yeah, you should.
Have you? Are you now actively playtesting it at cons?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we did a couple actual plays, and we are, you know, shopping it around to people, to publishers. I know it's weird sitting next to a publisher and she doesn't want to publish her own stuff.
No, I do. It's just, I mean, you know, I'd rather have someone
else
do it.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm not going to lie.
It's definitely part of it, right?
Right.
But it was actually quite remarkable going around at Gen Con talking to people about this game, and they're like, yeah, I'm totally into that.
Yeah, yeah,
and these are not Asian people we're talking about. These are like people from all different walks of life who are like, that resonates with me because my family immigrated from Russia or wherever
it's just an immigrant experience.
Yeah, yeah. That's our immigrant experience, obviously, is that our parents were from Hong Kong or mainland or somewhere.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
My parents are from Malaysia, but we all come from somewhere else.
Yeah.
And so do they. So do a lot of the other people who live in America and Canada, and they realize that and they recognize that. And this is just that story of trials and tribulations of those people, and we embody the damage that is done, those little microaggressions or whatever, into some supernatural force.
It almost, in a way, demystifies that sort of Asian immigrant experience and makes it relatable to anybody.
I hope so.
Yeah,
yeah, I really like that. Are any of you going to Big Bad Con?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, maybe we should play at a Big Bad Con.
Absolutely. It's on the schedule.
Oh, is
okay.
it?
Okay. Yes, I haven't.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, I forgot to tell you. Sorry.
I wouldn't know. I'm not going. I'll be at Chuck's. I'll be a couple hours north of you guys.
I have regrettably not really figured out my Big Bad Con schedule yet.
Well, I'll include that on it. And
yeah, because I've never been to San Francisco, so I'd really like to go see it in Chinatown.
Oh, you 100% should.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's awesome. So I guess you've done a lot of research.
Yeah.
So, you know, with the fraternal organizations during the Tang Wars?
Yeah.
So my family comes from one of those.
No way.
Seriously?
Yeah, you know the four brothers?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my grandfather's actually
one of those
president of the Toronto chapter.
That's super cool.
That's interesting.
Fraternal brotherhood that was once a criminal organization.
Wow.
Right, yeah. So yeah. I guess people, if you've never understood Tongs...
they're not triads.
Yes, yeah. They're not triads. They are community organizations for the protection of that community.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes they end up doing criminal things because...
To help the community.
To help the community.
And to survive.
And to survive because at that time, you know, it meant breaking some rules or some laws in order for that community to actually not... And it's not about prosperity. It's about just... baseline survival at some levels, right?
Yeah.
Chinatown in San Francisco was basically China outside of China. China
right.
in America, but very, very small.
Yeah, and it's a really interesting history. So I don't know if you guys are going to have time when you're down there, but there's almost definitely a Chinatown Museum.
Oh,
yes. Talking about
I'm already budgeting a whole day just to do that.
Yes.
Oh, awesome. Maybe we could go together.
Yeah, we should.
Yeah.
So it's something I'm super curious about because the four brothers at Longgong organization still has a headquarters there. Their old school traditional headquarters is still there.
Oh, wow.
And I really want to go.
Yeah,
you should.
Yeah.
And so when you talk about like early 20th century Chinese communities, like you're speaking right to my heart. And I'm sure you're speaking to so many people who are listening to this podcast who are either Chinese or who aren't.
Yeah.
And have, you know, come from an immigrant family. I mean, really, we're all immigrants to North America.
Yeah.
Except the people
Except
who are
the indigenous
people
who have been here since time immemorial.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I think this is a very relatable story. Now, speaking of other people, we've got questions.
Oh,
here we go.
We've got questions.
I think I know who they're from.
Yeah, and I'm expecting you to be extra savage.
I will try.
So we've got some who aren't.
Oh, we'll go through those first.
Aren't Ken.
Oh, okay, good.
Okay, nice mode.
Okay, question. Favorite board games? And I feel like, Sen, you're like pretty well known like board game designer.
Oh, sure.
What's
I guess.
Your favorite board game? It can't be Kingdom Rush, the board game.
No, my favorite board game, so I have two that I'll mention. The first one is Basari, and it's a older game by Rüdiger Dorn, I think. I think it's Rüdiger Dorn. And it's amazing. It is a game that don't ever play with four players, only three players. And it's basically a negotiation game that's dice-based around a track. So it's a game that I don't think gets enough love, but it's really fun because you're negotiating. And it's all open information, so my brain really likes that. And the second one is also a negotiation game. For some reason, I really like negotiation. It's I'm the Boss by Sid Saxon, and there should be a current version of that by Eagle Griffin Games. I don't know if there's a current version of Basari. If there is, it would be by Out of the Box, which I don't know if they're current at all. But I'm the Boss is this game where you're basically bidding, trying to negotiate with other players how many shares of a transaction you get. And you have cards that can allow you to take over the bid. So let's say Daniel and Banana are trying to divvy up a deal, and it's a, say, a 5-point deal. And Banana says, well, I've contributed the most, so I'll take 3 and you get 2.
Right.
And Daniel says, yes, I agree with you. And they're ready to make the deal, and I slam down my card that says, no, I'm the boss. And so I'm going to divvy up this deal. And you get 1, you get 1, I take 3. And you're like, but you didn't contribute any cards to it. How is that fair? I said, well, no, you give me that or I'm going to sink this deal. And Daniel says, screw it, I'm the boss. And he plays another I'm the boss card.
Ooh.
And now Daniel says, look, I gave 2 cards, you gave 3 cards to this. I'm still going to take 3, but you're going to get 2. Send, we're cutting you out of the deal entirely. Right, and so it's just this fun, frenetic game about
deals. That's a loose friends game. I like
that. Yeah, it is, kind of.
I like that.
I like it. It's really fun. Also, classic. Sid Saxon is one of the classic kind of fathers of modern board gaming. So
sweet. Okay, Banana.
Oh, gosh. Okay,
I'm
so
you on the spot.
Yeah. So I haven't played a board game in a while, except for Mintworks. I played Mintworks recently.
Oh, cool. Which one?
The tin one.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Are there different variants?
Yeah. So there's like, well, each of them has its own little thing.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Okay. So I don't know which version I played, but that was a lot of fun. You are basically trying to it's a small little worker placement game it comes in a tin, and it looks like little mints, but they're not. They're player tokens.
Oh, that's super cool.
It's
yeah,
very cute.
Yeah, so the whole ethos of that system is that everything has to fit inside a mint tin, like an Altoid-sized tin.
Right.
And all the pieces the majority of the pieces are, like, they look like mints.
Yeah.
So easy to lose.
Yeah.
It is.
Not for use around children.
Yeah, probably not.
Eat it. I have 2. Like, they're recent board games. The first one is Photosynthesis.
Oh,
really?
That's really
yeah.
good.
Okay.
I love Photosynthesis.
Why?
I think it's pretty.
Yes, it is.
I think it's super pretty. And I was at Queen City Conquest, not this year, but last year. And they had like an open, like a play to win thing. And
right.
I was like, oh, this game looks pretty. And I played it. And then I played it again.
And again.
And then
and
I played
again.
It again. And then I played it again. And then I bought it.
And Queen City is the one in Buffalo?
In Buffalo.
Right.
Yeah.
Which we never go to. Why don't we go to that one?
I have no idea.
It's
that's
like,
our
it's
midway point.
It's like the midway point
yeah.
between both of us.
We should do that.
We should do that. When is it?
It's this year it was in July. Last year it was around this time.
Okay.
It was like a week after Fan Expo.
Oh. Okay. Maybe that's why we don't go.
Yeah.
That's
probably why
close.
You don't go.
Yeah.
Yeah. It cuts it close. Time off and school.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so photos, I really like it because, so prior to, you know, starting my new job, I worked in, like, science communication.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's really great for that reason.
Okay, cool.
Second one is Happy Salmon.
Happy
Salmon's
oh,
awesome.
Yeah,
I
that's
love
a great one.
Happy Salmon.
We got it. We're doing the Happy Salmon thing right now.
Oh, wait, I thought it was like that.
It is like
it
that.
It is,
okay.
But we're close.
We're close.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
You'll have to figure out what we just did, but I just made it weird and I went, what we did. But I introduced Happy Salmon to my coworkers, and we play it every morning.
Oh, that's a really nice thing.
It's
oh,
a great
that's...
way to start the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, love Happy Salmon.
That's awesome.
And another one called, I forgot what it's called.
Well, explain the game.
Okay, so it's a card game, Brain Something. A black and white box, and you have these cards, and they have very ambiguous minimalistic designs on them.
Okay.
And you set a timer, and then everybody who's playing is supposed to write out whatever they think it could be.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah. I forget what it's called.
Oh, neat.
I want to say Brain Scoop, but I don't think that's it.
Like not Rorschach tests.
No, it like one of them, it could be like a square.
Okay.
It's like, oh, what is a square? A box. Whatever.
Right.
Oh, now that I think about it, I have another favorite, but go on.
I got
sorry,
that one in
on.
When I went to New York, actually.
Cool.
Hmm.
Yeah, I got it at someplace. Joe DeSimone took me there.
Is it Complete Strategist?
Yes, it was.
That's
there,
where
actually.
Everybody goes.
That's where everyone goes. Yeah, yeah.
yeah.
Oh, I miss Joe. He's
yeah.
Texas.
What's your other one?
Yeah, did you have another one?
Fake Artist Goes to New York.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
was
artist.
That one?
That's the one where one of you is a fake artist and the rest of you are artists and you're trying to draw a thing with only one line. And as you go around the table, The fake artist has to figure out what everyone's drawing, and everyone else has to figure out who the fake artist is.
Oh, that's super cool.
So when you're drawing, you can't pick up the pen. So you draw a line as long as you want, but you don't want to give away too much information, because then the fake artist will know what to draw. Like if I start drawing like something that looks like a bunny ear, the fake artist is going to go, I'm just going to draw a cottontail, and then they'll fit in.
Right. Yeah.
You don't want that.
Oh, that's super cool.
Yeah,
it's really good.
There's a board game that I really wanted to play for the longest time, but haven't had a chance to. Secret Hitler.
Okay.
I haven't played it yet. It's another like pretty looking board game.
Yeah, I haven't played it. It's pretty little. Pretty looking.
Okay. Next question.
Yeah.
Hit me with the Kens.
I'm not going to hit you with the Kens until the end.
Okay. Cool.
Okay.
So, question is like, since this is about Chinese food, favorite Chinese dish.
Oh. That's
a really
good question.
This is really broad.
I know you can throw out like two or three.
Okay, so I like anything with tendon or tripe.
I love tripe.
I'm that kind of guy.
I love tripe. Not a big fan of tendon, but I love tripe.
Oh, tendon is so good.
So, okay, in terms of barbecue, definitely tasu.
Okay,
yeah.
And
go with the classics.
Yeah, go with the classics, but then like appetizer-type dish, like jellyfish, like in Shanghainese cuisine.
Yes. With the chilies.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And
now I'm salivating.
Yeah.
And then also with the appetizers, Phoenix claws, chicken feet. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I don't like chicken feet.
Yeah, really? You're disowned.
No, because it's just a lot of work for very little payoff.
This is very true.
Oh yeah, you don't like tendon either, right? So
it's not a textual thing. Again, it's like liver, give or take.
Yeah.
Okay. I can see that.
For me, I love xiaolongbao.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
But when I was living in Shanghai, I actually had a xiaolongbao with crab meat inside, alongside the pork.
Right.
Row where they folded it.
The fancy kind.
That's fancy. Yeah. And then there's this other dish, and I don't know what it's called in Chinese, but it's a giant bamboo basket, and it's rice with crab meat, and then they put a Dungeness crab, the rest of the crab in it, and they steam the whole thing.
Oh, that sounds good.
Oh,
yeah. I have a picture of it actually on my phone because I love it that much. It's this dish.
Oh,
okay, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know what it's called either.
I don't know what it's called either.
But yeah, those are my two. Are
yeah,
my
that's a good
two.
One.
Oh, yeah. Actually, something that my grandmother used to make was, this is going to sound gross in English, but it's...
I think all Chinese food really does sound kind of gross in English.
Yeah, they're meat stuffed glutinous balls.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
I don't know how to call it. Like, what do you call
it? Are they wrapped? Or not wrapped?
No, it's just like these, it's like...
They're like a little thing, right?
How do you say
it? Like glutinous material or...
They're like
rice?
It's like a glutinous skin.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I get it.
It's not like a dumpling, though.
It's not like a dumpling.
Okay, because there's another thing that I'm thinking of that also has a glutinous shell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With meat.
I wonder if it's the same thing.
What do you call it in Chinese?
I forgot. Crap, I've assimilated too much. I'll get back to you on that.
Okay,
all right,
we'll figure it out. Now
this will go into show notes.
Yeah,
we're gonna go to the Kens because there are a lot of Kens.
Oh no,
all the Kens.
Ken.
Yeah, I'm gonna skip some of the Kens. I'm gonna go for the good one.
Oh really?
Yeah.
I could take it.
Okay, the first one's kind of like a throwaway.
Oh.
Is the world ready for Jiangxi in the banquet hall?
Fuck yes. Yeah.
I think the world... It's not that the world's ready. The world needs it.
Yeah,
I think so.
And you're a publisher.
It's like Batman.
It's like Batman.
Yeah.
It's like Batman. It's just underappreciated. No. I appreciate both of you.
Thank you.
Okay, after you complete your takeover of the games industry, which industry will you target next?
Probably weed.
That's a good one.
That's an interesting prospect.
Gotta beat up Mike Tyson with the Tyson Ranch. You
heard
about that?
No.
What? Yeah, Mike Tyson's is opening up a luxury weed ranch. That's a vacation destination.
Mm.
And he's got like a weed podcast and everything. Mike Tyson is big in weed.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow.
Super big in weed.
Well, I was actually thinking like fashion.
Oh, fashion. Yeah. Actually, yeah, scratch weed. We're going fashion.
We're going fashion.
Yeah.
I would go into the weed business. It's super lucrative.
It is, but...
Yeah, but, I mean, seriously, come on.
That's true, I guess. No, I'm still sticking with the weed. So we got two for fashion and one for the weed business. Okay. If you were going to bake Ken, your rival, a kind of cake, what would it be?
I thought you were just going to end that sentence there. Like,
if you were going to bake Ken...
Like any sort of baked good or
a cake.
It has to be cake. Well, I would make a vegan cheesecake because that does not require baking, and Ken does not deserve my baking.
Rip.
That's kind of right to the heart of the matter.
Wow.
Dagger in back. Probably in the front, actually.
Dang.
She like walks right up to you, Ken, and like bam. Dagger.
Stabbed. Okay.
Take that, Ken.
Last one. Last one. It's the last Ken question, and we're going to end this podcast with a Ken question. Because I know you want to say something to Ken.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. What, and it's a good one. It's the, go Ken for this one. What game mechanic did you read and were like, I wish I came up with that?
Ooh.
There's a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot.
It could be board games. I'm going to extend the question. It could be board games or RPGs.
So Jenga is my go-to for everything. So,
Jenga.
I mean, Dread, for sure, is like, didn't I think of that, right?
Yeah.
Why didn't I think of something so simple?
Okay, so it's going to be Jenga.
I think Bree Sheldon and Whitney DeLoglio, they are both working on selfie games. And when I read their games, I was like, I want, what, a selfie game? That's so simple. Like, of course. So I think... it's more like a journaling game. You're just like,
which I like. That's why I liked your vlog game.
Oh, thank you.
That was super fun.
Yeah.
Okay.
Have you seen her vlog game?
No.
Oh, I have a vlog game.
Yo, I want to play this.
No. Tell them about it. It's super awesome.
So it's a LARP. It's now it's coined as a live action online role playing game.
Okay.
That's
coined
a thing?
By Jarrett. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a thing now.
Okay. You're a thing. It's a thing.
It's a thing.
But it's not just my game. Like, I like some others.
It's like a classification of things.
Yeah. So it's called They're Onto Me, and basically you are vlogging over a series of days, up to 7 days, and each vlog is a minute long of you acting out as if the world is trying to get you. So there's like aliens that are invading Earth, and you're acting out as a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah. And like every day you get a little deeper into the shit.
You just basically become Alex Jones if you're doing the alien.
You
the
could.
Conspiracy
you could.
Route.
If
that's,
you.
That's
if
up
you,
to you.
Yeah, it really is.
So like you know something that the world doesn't.
Yeah.
And the government's coming after you.
Yes. And every day you vlog for a minute about that thing.
Yeah.
I'm 100% going to do that and put that on the Asians Represent socials.
Yes. I'll send you the game.
Yeah, send it to me.
It's super simple and super awesome.
Vlogging kind of like hits me in like an emotional spot.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So when I was living in China, like I didn't know how to speak Chinese when I went there.
Right.
And so I was like learning as I was going, and I was living alone
in
this like very rural part of Shanghai and then rural parts of like Zhejiang province.
Oh.
And the only thing that I did to pass the time was vlog.
Wow.
I made 90 vlogs when I was in China. Actually, did like one a day for a month.
Oh, that's actually
kind of
cool.
It's how I learned how to do video.
That's really cool.
I'm vlogging. So like, I want to do this. I want to play this game now. So send it to me. I'll play it and then I'll post it on the Asians Represent.
Yeah.
Oh man.
I super appreciate that.
We'll figure out what the conspiracy is. Maybe I'll let the listeners.
Yeah.
Yes.
Send me what you want the conspiracy to be. I'll make a Twitter thread about it.
Yeah. There are a couple of different versions of it. The first one was about aliens, and then the second one was about political stuff.
I want to do aliens or zombies.
Yeah.
Yeah. All legit.
Oh my god. Or lizard people.
Yeah.
Even more legit.
Oh my god. I could just do They Live. Have you seen that movie?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I could do They Live. Yeah. Oh my god. My head is swimming with that. Okay. So, when we end every episode, I always ask the guests where people can find them on the internet. So where can people find you on the internet, Sam?
The best place to find me on the internet is actually at Maple Syrup. So... I co-host a weekly game design podcast, vidcast thingy. It's called Meeple Syrup. So if you're on Facebook, look us up at MeepleSyrup, Meeple Syrup. And on Twitter, you can find me at Senfonglim, SenFonglim.
on Twitter, it's BananaChan, by the way, on Twitter.
if people didn't know already.
Yeah. You can find me on at BananaChan Games. I just changed my tag. Before it was banana underscore, doesn't matter. Anyway, my tag is BananaChanGames. And you can also find me on Facebook at BananaChan Games.
Nice.
Oh, yeah, you have that whole thing. Remember the other day when I said, somebody's copying you.
Oh, yeah.
It was just her.
Yeah, it was just me. No, it was my public version.
Yeah, her public page versus her private page.
Yeah.